Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
Happy Thursday to you, everybody. Welcome into Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you on this Thursday. It is Jacob Albracht alongside Tommy Kester. We've got Jad Chambers, man in the IHOP hotline for us, brought to you by IHOP, 869-1240. Weekdays now, you can celebrate with your IHOP house faves, all your favorites, just $6 Monday through Friday. Glad to be able to talk to you that way. Glad to be able to talk to you on our video streams. You can find that, of course, on 12 News Connected Plus. 12 News Plus Connected. You can find it on Facebook, YouTube, X. You can also leave us voicemails, voice messages on the Odyssey app. Just click the little microphone as we get ready for this big Thursday. It's a celebration Thursday for Royals fans. Royals are on to the ALDS against the Yankees. We have that. It's a K-State bye week, but we'll get all caught up with Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider, as well. And we've got, well, our betting insider, PJ Glasser, stopping by to get us ready for all the football this weekend. What about a little Thursday night football betting? All kinds of good stuff to get to with PJ as well. Good morning, Tommy. How are you?
Man, I'm good. It's good to be here today. Good to talk about the Royals and, you know, of course, everything that happened with them. I'm a little bummed out about my Braves last night. I didn't have super high hopes about their chances in the wild card round. I'm just grateful that I've got the Royals that I can lock into moving forward.
Same here. Your Braves, I thought, accomplished a lot, honestly, this year with the injuries. And so I think it's rarely do I ever think that, like, if you didn't, you know, you get to the postseason, you get bounced, it's good. I think that was good for the Braves, all things considered, this year. But we all get to party with the Royals. Look, it's going to be, it's here. Like, this is great. And it was another incredible high octane, high stress game last night. Tommy, Royals score 3 runs in the wild card round. What would you have said if I told you that?
I would have thought they would have lost both of those games, to be honest with you.
And that's what's so nuts about it, and so fun and wacky and wild. But honestly, I mean, it's a little vindicating, right? We've been talking about this for, geez, we've been talking about this for 5 months, that if they can just get there, they're built for this. And what do we see? They get there and they're built for this, right? Because they can pitch. They have great starting pitching. And now all of a sudden, they have a great bullpen. That's unexpected. We'll see if the offense comes around. I tend to think it will. Vinny Pasquantino looks good. He was highly productive yesterday, which was great to see. 2 for 4 with one of the two RBIs. Bobby Witt Jr. has been really good in the series, offensively and defensively. And if those two guys are going, you feel pretty good. Salvador Perez does not look as good, but he will. And so, you know, you need those two guys to be productive, really those three. And then you just one or two big hits from the rest of the lineup, and you're good to go. Quatraro's pushing the right buttons. You feel good about that, too. Not just in the bullpen, where he seems to always have the right answer so far. Throwing Michael Massey back up in the leadoff spot. Massey's been really good in the leadoff spot the last two games. He had a hit in the first game. I say really good. He's been good. He was very good yesterday. Had the leadoff double that led to a run. He's being productive. Okay, Tommy Pham's not playing. We thought he'd be a key to the series. All right. You know, they pinch hit him. Quintero's got he's button pushing right now. And that feels good. And the good news too is they don't get much time off before they get right back at it and go on to face the Yankees. Game one of that series coming quickly. It turns around just Saturday. So you get a travel day today and then a real off day tomorrow. We don't have pitching announcements or anything like that yet. But you can assume it will go, at least that I've seen, you can assume that it'll go Walker, Reagan's, Lugo in games one, two, and three. Everybody's on normal rest. You feel good about that. That allows your two aces to throw two games, feel totally comfortable with Walker taking on that kind of role. So it's all looking good. Now, this is a best of five series. So maybe it doesn't allow everybody to throw two games, as I say that out loud, and maybe they do reshuffle a little bit, but I doubt it. I doubt they would put people on short rest. I think they'll throw Walker in game one. We haven't heard Quatraro say that yet, I assume, but Walker should probably go game one.
I think that's what they'll do. Obviously, Reagans and Lugo will not be available for game one. The only question becomes, you know, if Brady Singer is the fourth guy, he's going to be on really long rest. It's going to be a long time before he potentially sees the mound again. And I don't know. I mean, I guess theoretically, if they really just wanted to shorten that rotation down, they could throw Walker in game four if there was a game four. I don't know. I think it's probably going to be a little bit better to maybe lean on Brady Singer in that position. Yeah. But the only concern I've got with that is, like I mentioned, it's going to be a long time between starts for Brady Singer. And so that would be the only thing, you know, that I would be slightly concerned about if he did have to pitch a game four. But we're a long ways away from that, you know, coming to fruition.
But the beauty is those are the things you get to think about, right, when your team is in a situation like this. And Brady Singer, I love what Brady Singer's done this year. He had the big, you know, he had a nice start in his finale, but probably for me, Brady Singer's not going to see much action in the postseason. Maybe in a seven gamer, but I mean, he's been hittable, right? Since his great streak, and he was so good this year. His month of September was not good.
They may not have a choice. They may not have a choice. I mean,
what I'm saying is go Lorenzen at that point.
I'm not sure that, there's never been, well, I don't want to say never because I don't know, but I would think that there would rarely have been situations where teams have gotten all the way with just three starting pitchers that they're cycling through. I think there's got to be a fourth. And maybe there have been teams that have had an opener that has come in. And I remember specifically that in the 2021 World Series with the Braves and the Astros, there was a game where the Astros trotted out an opener that pitched, you know, an inning or two and then turned it over to the bullpen. So, I mean, I guess that sort of thing has happened, but at some point, and whether it's Brady Singer or Michael Lorenzen, they're going to have a fourth starting pitcher at some point in the postseason if they continue to advance. They may not need one in the ALDS, but in the ALCS and in the World Series, potentially, if they get that far, I think they definitely will.
Yeah, you've got to stretch it. But my point is that you'd like to see Lorenzen to me probably. But it's going to be a combination of those guys. It doesn't really matter. We know who the Yankees are going to throw out. They're going to throw Gerrit Cole in Game One. They're going to throw Rodon in Game Two, and then they'll see. But I guess the best thing is, and didn't intend to lead this way, is that Walker gives you, you don't feel bad about Walker being the guy that probably is counted on in the key spots of this series, which would be game one and either game four or game five. Can you get, you know, could you potentially get Reagans twice? Here's the problem with that. And this is not good for the Royals, I would say, honestly. They take Sunday off. So by taking Sunday off, you prevent, because you could get Reagans on Sunday on regular rest, right? He pitched Tuesday, then Wednesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, every fifth day, he'd be the starter on that Sunday. But because he gets pushed, the next game would then be the 12th. So, you know, so let's, sorry for doing this aloud, but if he goes on the 6th, or sorry, the, um, the 7th, then going on the 12th.
That'd be five days rest.
Three, four, five. Yeah, so he could go. So he,
but here, here's
so,
the, here's
so, so
the
he's
issue
your game five guy? Yeah, yeah, the, so then the, I think you're good.
Well, the issue with that, if this goes into a fifth game, that the Royals would have to make a determination. And they, I think they would. Like, knowing it would be regular rest, I think that they would, in a deciding game five, go ahead and have Reagans pitch that. But then you don't have him available to start game one of the ALCS. So that's the the trend.
Yeah.
Well, that, I mean, don't say who cares. Like, that's an important thing.
If you were in a game, like, what I'm saying about who cares is, like, if you were in game five.
For sure. They'll make that decision, absolutely. I mean, to throw Reagans out there in a decisive game five, 100%. You absolutely throw your ace out there for the chance to move on to the next round. That's just that's the trade-off if the series goes to five games, is that then you don't have your ace to start off the ALCS. Now, they would have Lugo to start off the ALCS.
And I think you could still get Reagans twice in that series, no matter what, which would be good, but you can't get him three times, which, you know, that does matter. It matters. And yeah, that, you know, the length of the series always matters. And to the, you know, to the credit of the Royals for getting this one done quickly, is they get to do these things and they don't have to have like an all hands on deck situation in a deciding game three. You know, this is the benefit of winning your division, right, and getting the bye. The Yankees get to set the rotation exactly how they want it. The wild card teams can't ever do that because they have to get through the wild card round. But here again is why we've liked the Royals. I'm not going to say I feel just as good with Reagans, Lugo, or Waka on the mound, but it's pretty close between those three for me. Like, I feel pretty good with any of those three, any combination of those three, any order of those three. I think Reagans has lifted himself up, right? And especially after you saw his game one performance. But I mean, with the bullpen going, like, I trust any of those three guys. Who's the fourth? I don't know. I would say it's Lorenzen. And look, we're ready to party about the win yesterday, but we're already looking ahead. And that's fun too. I love that. But
I do have some reflective thoughts that, you know, I've been thinking about for the last 12 hours or so that I think are important as we look back on, you know, these two games and then move forward.
Let's hit them next. We got some viewer comments. We got a voice message. We'll do all that. PJ Glasser coming later in the hour, and we'll switch to some football. But we're partying for the Royals here. On to the ALDS. Are you kidding me? There are some numbers with the Royals and how good they are when they get to the postseason that are just unbelievable. We can get you that number as well. It's all coming for you. It's all Brockton Caster. We'll give away some HTO later in the program as well. Want to say thank you to Prairie Fire Coffee for fueling us up each and every morning here at KFH with a great cup of coffee. We'll come right back. More Royals talk. We return on Sports Daily.
And 1240 KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Daily. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. I'm finally getting out for some golf. First time in a while. I'm excited. I'm going to go play nine holes before I go into TV.
I wondered if you were, because you're rocking a golf shirt today. So I thought either you were trying to be a little bit more stylish than your Hawaiian shirt, or you were actually going to go play golf.
I mean, is this really any different than a Hawaiian shirt?
It looks significantly better than a Hawaiian shirt.
It's a hot pink watermelon shirt. For those of you, I think it's a watermelon. I think that's what it's supposed to be. I just like the color. Big pink fan, by the way. So, you know, whatever. We're going to play golf. We'll look better than we'll play. But Crestview Country Club gives you 36 holes of golf to be able to give that a shot. You've got tennis. They got great facilities, great restaurant, great bar, as Tommy and I have found out several times. But give them a call. Go out, check out the facilities. They got all kinds of membership packages. I say this all the time. It's different than you think. It's different than the farm boy like me thought. I've enjoyed it a great deal. So give them a call. We appreciate their support. All right, let's start with a voice message from Ken, who is getting really good at the voice messages on the Odyssey app. We appreciate them, Ken. Here we go, Jed. What does Ken have to say?
To channel my inner Jackie Gleason, how sweet it is. And how about Bobby Witt in that first inning? Jammed on a pitch, still gets a grounder to the right side, moves Massey to third, that brings the infield in, and then the pass watch grant hits a grounder through the right side through the pulled in infield. What a great play by the superstar. On to New York.
Yes, sir. Great defensive play as well. Late in the game to get Zerpa out of a bit of a jam there and to bail the Royals out. Bobby Witt Jr. put the Royals on his back and he took them through the series, he and the pitching. And that's been great. New York presents a place that's been good to Royals fans. That's where they clinched their World Series. Different team, but same city. Tommy, it was remarkable yesterday what the Royals were able to do really in the series, but it doesn't surprise me at all. This is what we thought was possible. Listen to this from Randy Jazzy Yearley, who follows the Royals and is a lot of fun. The Royals, in going back to the 1985 World Series, Royals are 27-9 in their last 36 postseason games. They haven't had that sort of stretch in any regular season since, but that's what they've done in the postseason. They thrive here. This is what they do through generations of Royals teams. They haven't had a lot of opportunities, but when they get there, they make it count.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way that the Royals have, you know, been able to win those championships in 85 and 2015 is that while they don't get to the postseason often, when they do get to the postseason, they make the most of it. And what's interesting, if you even take that stat a step further, is that if you go back, and I'm guessing on this, but I'm pretty sure that this is the case, when you go back before the last 36 postseason games, like in the late 70s, early 80s, the Royals were in the playoffs quite a bit, and the team that they faced off against the most were the Yankees in the postseason during that time. And the Yankees typically got the better of the Royals in the postseasons in the late 1970s. In fact, I'm pretty sure that there was a four-year stretch where, or 4 years and probably, I don't know, a decade or so in the late 70s when those two teams matched up against each other in the ALCS. And the Royals only got the Yankees one time in a series, and that was in 1980 when they ended up going to the World Series and losing. So other than that, the Yankees had the Royals' number, you know, back in, when was that, late, like 78, 79, whenever that was, for several years in a row. And that's the team that they're going to be taking on in the ALDS. So if you stretch that a little bit further out past the 36 most recent postseason games, it really was the Royals and the Yankees back in the day facing off against each other a ton.
A collision of styles ensuing here. The big bats of the Yankees loom, and I don't think you take too much from it. I mean, certainly the Yankees will have the advantage in their hitting-friendly ballpark. So you just got, if they can get one in New York, I really like the Royals' chances here because you know they get back home and it's a little more advantageous. But honestly, they don't care. You know, they don't care. They're just going to get out there and they're going to scrap and claw, and it's house money. I don't know how. I mean, I guess there's always inherent pressure on the Yankees, but I don't know. I feel like both teams are probably playing pretty free and easy in this one. Ken also left his comment: Long, Bubich, Ursig. None of them were on the opening day roster. I mean, Piccolo just a masterclass this year in the offseason, at the trade deadline, all of it. You know, it's been as good a run from a general manager as we've seen, certainly for the Royals. And I heard Danny Matthews say this here yesterday on KFH in the post game, like sometimes in baseball, things just go your way. Right. And you don't bounce back from 106 losses, which has never been done before, if you don't have some things going your way. And the Royals haven't had anything go their way for 9 years. Now, and I'm not going to say everything's going their way this year because that is not the truth, but a lot of things have gone their way and they have made some really shrewd decisions that are obviously impacting this team. Think about all the late additions between Gurriel and Pham, and you don't think either one of those guys is going to have a big impact on this postseason? Of course they are at some point. So like it's pretty amazing what they were able to do in the offseason and parlay it. And John Sherman probably does not get enough credit for his role in all this to allow Piccolo to do these things because they spent money and they spent money at the deadline. Like he put his money where his mouth was. He wanted a new stadium. We challenged him last season. Exactly what they did, and look what happens. And so it's just been a lot of fun. I know Royals fans are having a blast with this. I felt bad for Baltimore. You know, you get a 3 o'clock Wednesday game. That wasn't even a packed stadium yesterday. It's going to be packed at the K. It's going to be wild.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned before the break that I've been feeling a little reflective in the last 12 hours or so. And yeah, J.J. Piccolo has done a phenomenal job, but Matt Quatrero is not getting the credit that he deserves. And
yeah,
it was on full display in both games of the wild card round. How he pushed the right buttons, how he got the most out of, especially the pitching staff, you know, to be able to hold down that Orioles lineup. And, you know, there's a reason why I think he absolutely should be the manager of the year in the American League. I think he will ultimately be the manager of the year in the American League. I mean, I guess maybe the only other manager would be A.J. Hinch with what he's done with Detroit. But I would give it to Quatrero right now just because of the turnaround and the fact that that doesn't happen in the history of Major League Baseball and getting the Royals to this point. Had they gotten bounced in the wild card round? Maybe not. But I definitely think since they moved on, I would absolutely give it to Quatrero. He's not getting the credit that he deserves.
He's not. That's an interesting conversation. I would say for the credit of the turnaround, that's what makes J.J. Piccolo.
Well, sure. I mean, 100%.
So what I would say about Quatrero, even more than the turnaround that's been impressive to me from his job, it's been navigating some pretty significant landmines this year as well. Their bullpen coming out of the gates was awful, like horrible, horrible bad. That's what everyone kept bringing up in the Baltimore series. They blew two late inning leads in the regular season early in the year to Baltimore. To navigate those muddy waters, to navigate Bobby Witt Jr., as we learned, not wanting to be the leadoff hitter, to like just piecing it all together when they were so top heavy in a lineup. Like, those are the things I think for Quatrero that, and I'll say this too. And I guess I'll eat crow. At least I did, and I can't remember if you did. Challenged last year, you know, when they made the change at manager, things got worse, and we're looking for accountability. And I was like, I think Quatrero has to have some, right? It got worse, but again, a credit to the front office, a credit to Piccolo was a part of the administration,
yeah.
And they elevate him, and John Sherman stuck with it.
They put their money where their mouth is, at least John Sherman did, and then they absolutely were aggressive and not okay with the status quo. Really quick, before we go to break, Ann Rogers, MLB.com, covers the Royals. She's reporting that the Royals have decided Michael Wacha in Game 1, Cole Reagans in Game 2, which we kind of assumed. Yeah. They haven't announced anybody past the first two games. Seth Lugo in Game 3, I'm sure.
He'll get regular rest.
If you go back to the series about a month ago when the Yankees and the Royals played each other, remember the Yankees took 2 of 3, but the one win was Lugo starting. It was a 5-0 Royals victory. Lugo pitched 7 innings of 3-hit shutout baseball, 10 strikeouts in that one game that the Royals were able to take. So, if they can get him in Game 3, it looks like that's probably going to happen. They'll be looking at him to repeat that kind of performance.
And they won't want to go a Game 4 announcement until they absolutely have to, because they may need the guys that they want to pitch in that game in Game 1 or 2. You know, if somebody gets in trouble, you may go to Lorenzen early, and there you go. Brady Singer will be your Game 4 starter. So I bet we don't hear on Game 4 until we get the deadline for Major League Baseball to make a Game 4 announcement, because we just don't know what happens in the first three games, and that will alter it. All right, we'll get more to the Royals in the second hour. We'll continue the Royals party here. You can celebrate with us on the IHOP hotline, 869-1240. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little football, a little betting. What do we like in Thursday Night Football tonight? What do we like this weekend? PJ Glasser, our betting insider, joins the show next. Don't go away. It's Albrock and Caster, Jad Chambers producing. It's Sports Daily. We'll be right back.
And 1240 KFH. The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, Jad Chambers producing for us. Glad to be here with you on this Thursday, on this Sports Daily Thursday. Royals fans celebrating hard. Crossing my fingers on a 200 to 1 Royals futures bet. In the spirit of that, let's bring in our betting insider, PJ Glasser, joining the program. Glad to have PJ in with us each and every week. On the line, he's the host of Send It In, an Odyssey Sports betting insider, more officially PJ Glasser. Insider calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. Also, be sure to listen to the Send It In podcast for more analysis. Just search Send It In wherever you find those podcasts. PJ, welcome. How are you?
Doing good, guys. It's you know, it was tough coming on the show today because I'm an Orioles fan, as you know. Yeah, I was at the game yesterday, so hearing all the Royals talk, and it's just brutal the last 2 days. The Orioles had all those injuries to their pitching, and that was kind of what we were concerned about heading into October. Turned out the pitching was great. They just couldn't get timely hits. You knew when they couldn't capitalize with bases loaded and no outs yesterday, that was pretty much the season. But now that the O's are out, guys, I'm on the Royals bandwagon because at this point, just anybody but the Yankees, you know. So hopefully they can keep it rolling. That pitching that they have, the starting pitching, and then Urseg at the back on the bullpen is really good. So it's going to be nuts. I mean, the American League, the Orioles and the Astros are out. Three AL Central teams left. It's kind of crazy. So who knows what's going to happen? It feels like it's setting up nice for the Yankees, but man, the Royals and the Tigers are hot right now, as you guys know.
You know, PJ, I'm feel bad for you because, you know, obviously you're an Orioles fan, but on top of that, we know you're a Ravens fan, and it didn't go so well in the opening football game with the Chiefs and the Ravens. Is there, I'm guessing there's quite a bit of hatred or dislike for Kansas City in Baltimore right now?
There is. We cannot beat you guys for whatever reason. KC just owns us. So, yeah, definitely. There's definitely some hatred there, some animosity. Because, you know, you guys knocked us out of the ALCS in 2014, too. You swept us there. So you've had our number in baseball, obviously in football, too. Just the way that the Orioles season ended, there were so many expectations coming into this year with being a 100-win team last year and being the top seed in the AL. So the way that it all ended is disappointing. But look, the Royals got a really good team. Bobby Witt is a superstar. And, you know, Q's a really good manager. They find ways to win games. And I can't wait to watch their pitching staff go up against the Yankees and obviously Judge and Soto, because, you know, in baseball, like being in the AL East, guys, there's something about Yankee Stadium, and you're going to find out a lot about your team, especially your pitchers and how they handle the pressure of the Bronx and just that stadium and the fan base. So I'm looking forward to watching the young Royals go up there to New York and seeing how they handle that.
Yeah, it'll be a blast, and I think you can still catch them at like 11-1 right now, but you kind of missed the window to bet the Royals and get that true value. Let's talk football, PJ. We'll start with Thursday night football because it's Thursday. It's a good one. Bucks-Falcons. I'm pretty intrigued by this game. It's a low total, which probably shouldn't surprise us, but it also is, you know, some teams that are capable, I think, offensively of getting there. The Bucks are 1.5-point dogs. Where do you start with this one tonight?
I'm looking at the under guys at 43.5, right? And you obviously have two teams that are pretty good on offense, but these Thursday night games, I mean, we see how ugly they've been already this season, right? The Giants and Cowboys was just gross football. Bills, Dolphins, even before Tua got hurt, wasn't very good either. So, I mean, you've had a bunch of these games that just have not been good. They've been ugly. They've kind of been one-sided. And usually on these Thursday night games, you just kind of lean towards the more talented team. Problem is, these two teams are pretty even, right? I mean, if you want to make the case of who's better, I think you can make an argument of Atlanta or Tampa. I certainly think the Falcons are probably the more talented team, but the Bucs are playing great. It looks like they've kind of picked up from where they were last year, making it to the playoffs and going into the divisional round. I would lean Atlanta in this game on the money line. They're obviously right there with the Chiefs. Could have won that game. Pulled off a great upset against Philly. Maybe we're fortunate to win last week against New Orleans. It feels like all their games come down to the wire. Honestly, guys, feels like a great game to do one of those teasers where you take the Bucks plus 7.5 and then you take the under 49.5. So you buy up the total 6 points, the Bucks side 6 points, because it just feels like a one score game that's going to be lower scoring. But if I had to make I would like the under. I'd look at Bijan over 3.5 receptions as well. I think he's going to be a factor out of the receiving game. Tampa's been a little susceptible to like running quarterbacks, and obviously Kirk Cousins isn't going to give you that. So I would look at some short intermediate stuff, maybe an extension of the run game to Bijan. So I like his look as well over receptions.
Is there a good quarterback prop play in this game, whether it's with Baker or with Cousins? You know, their yardage totals are not super high. I mean, you know, somewhere, both of them are somewhere between 225 and 250. And then as far as passing touchdowns, the line is set at about 1.5 for both of them. Do you like either of those plays for either one of these quarterbacks tonight?
Yeah, honestly, not really, Tommy, because like you said, it is kind of a lower passing prop total. The touchdowns are both at 1.5. I don't want to touch that. I would look at interceptions, you know, because I do like the under. I feel like it could be some sloppy play. There could be some turnovers in this game. So you can either take, you know, one quarterback to throw an interception. I kind of like at BetMGM, there's a special of total combined interceptions with Cousins and Mayfield tonight over 1.5. At +120, I think that could be a look as well because Vita Vea is back and he's healthy. So important to Tampa on defense and obviously clogging up the run. Maybe make Atlanta a little one dimensional. I think Cousins could maybe have an interception. Baker Mayfield as well. So I kind of like the total combined interceptions with the quarterback today +120 over 1.5.
All right, let's look at the other games on the slate, and we'll save Monday Night Football for the end with the Chiefs. But we have interesting matchups up and down the board. Last week, it felt like, and I heard this a lot, and I felt it in my wallet, it felt like we broke through in the NFL a little bit. And I think for the most part, that's because offense has kind of opened up a little bit, which let everybody hit all their same game parlays, and the props were good, right? Do you feel like there's momentum in something like that when we've seen offenses bogged down a little bit? Should we look for more of that as we move forward? Maybe a little more offense, teams play less in the preseason, things like that. Are there trends there to take away?
You know, I think it just depends, honestly. Jacob, I think what's been so shocking is obviously all the big upsets that we've had to start the year. I know, you know, a lot of people out there, certainly a lot of the listeners, I'm sure, are in the NFL survivor pools. And I don't know if anybody's left at this point just because of how well the big underdogs have been doing, not only against the spread, but outright as well. But like you said, we finally started to see some more scoring last week just because of the preseason now and the fact that it's shortened and it's a longer regular season and those guys aren't there. It does feel like the first 3 or 4 weeks are almost the preseason. And now that we're 4 games in, bye weeks are starting to hit. We're starting to get more data points on all of these different teams. So, I mean, look, Washington's a 3.5-point favorite against Cleveland this week. Like, imagine if I told you that to start the season. The Vikings are favored against the Jets on a neutral out in London. Imagine if I would have told you that before the season, right? So there are just so many things now that we kind of have more data points on all these teams that it necessarily won't make it easier to bet. But you can lean on more things throughout the year once we start getting to, you know, the middle portions of the season that I think will be easier to handicap, more reliable trends and stuff for bettors to look at.
I want to focus in for a second on the Jets and Vikings in London on Sunday morning. The Jets are 2.5-point dogs. There's been some perceived friction between Aaron Rodgers and Robert Saleh. And then all of a sudden, Sam Darnold looks like one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. When it comes to betting and the different angles with a game like this on a neutral site overseas, does that change the way that you want to approach it because of the time change and all of that? Or do you just go at it like you normally would?
Usually, guys, I mean, the way these London games go are you usually just bet the better team straight up. I can't remember the exact stat, but it's something crazy. Like, I think the favorites out in London are like 36-10 straight up, or it's some big number like that where it's usually that simple. You take the favorite, you take the better team, you just bet them on the money line, and they just win the game when you go out international. The interesting thing about this is that the Jets in the look-ahead line before they lost outright to Denver and Minnesota had another great performance against Green Bay, the Jets were actually the small favorite in this game, which I think makes this such a fascinating handicap. Who's the better team? Is it the Jets or is it the Vikings? Minnesota's obviously had an incredible start to the season. They're undefeated. Darnold's playing great. Flores has been awesome on defense. I will say, though, look at the teams and the quarterbacks that Minnesota has played, right? I mean, you're talking about Brock Purdy, CJ Stroud, Daniel Jones, guys that are either young or not very good. Well, Flores now and Jordan Love last week. And now Flores and the Vikings have to go up against Aaron Rodgers, who's seen everything. You can't fool Rodgers. So that chess match between those two, I think, is going to be really good. I think it's a good spot for the Jets, guys. They just a bad home loss like that against Denver in the rain, ugly and sloppy. I would expect them to bounce back. Their defense has looked really good the last couple weeks. And look, it's a big game for them, right? Don't want to drop to 2-3. Minnesota obviously is undefeated. You would think there's some regression coming for them at some point. I lean towards the Jets. I like the under as well, though, 40.5. I think it is a lower scoring game. So I would look at the under, and I like the Jets plus the points.
Another big one, another one of the marquee games, and there are a lot of them this week. Bills-Texans, both not necessarily about outcome, but about the way they played last week. Feel like they probably didn't play very well. This feels like an opportunity for Houston. They're a home dog, which is pretty surprising that they'd be a home dog to anybody. But what's your take on that game?
I like the Texans as well, Jacob. You know, I think a lot of people just expect the Bills to bounce back, you know, against after that performance against Baltimore and just kind of flush out that game. Houston's 3-1 this season, and they're 0-4 against the spread, right? They're kind of Chiefs-like in the sense that they have a good record, but by no means have they played their A game, which is kind of scary for everybody else. I think Baltimore did some things last week that could maybe expose Buffalo on the defensive side of the ball. I think it's a good buy-low spot on the Texans at this point. They're at home. Their offense is going to get clicking at some point. So I like Houston as well. This line has continued to flip-flop throughout the week from the Bills being favored to Houston being favored. Now the Bills have gone back to being favorites. So it's not one of my favorite bets, but if I had to make it, I do like the Texans at plus 100. Again, they're 0-4 against the spread this season. They're going up against one of the best perceived teams in the NFL, and it's essentially a pick 'em. I think a lot of people are going to be on Buffalo this week, but I like Houston.
Let's jump ahead to Monday Night Football, PJ. The Chiefs back at Arrowhead on Monday night against the Derek Carr-led Saints, which started off the season fantastic offensively. They've kind of declined. They've diminished quite a bit in the last couple of weeks. What do you like in the primetime matchup to wrap up this week?
I like the over in the game, honestly, guys, at 43.5. Look, I feel like the last couple of years at Arrowhead, the unders have been extremely profitable. We obviously think of the Chiefs and we think offense, but that's just not the way it's been in Kansas City. They've been lower scoring games. I think without Rashee Rice, though, this week, Travis Kelce got going a little bit against the Chargers. Like, this is kind of new territory for Mahomes and Andy Reid, right, with these injuries and trying to integrate new guys and find ways to kind of get clicking on offense. Mahomes has not been good to start this year. He's got 7 turnover-worthy throws, which is one of the tops in the NFL. So despite the Chiefs and how poorly they've been playing, especially on offense, they're 4-0, they're playing well. Saints offense for much of the season has looked very, very good. Derek Carr, as you guys know from his time with the Raiders, feels like he's always played the Chiefs pretty well, especially in Kansas City. Feels like he has good games. So I think we kind of get some points in this game. I like over 43.5. We were talking about the total against the Chargers last week and how you never see Chiefs totals under 40. I mean, you had so many turnovers in that game and just missed opportunities that it ended up going under the total. Again, it just feels like these numbers keep dropping and eventually we're just going to get a good kind of buy low spot on a total in a Chiefs game. I think we might get that this week. So I would look over 43.5 in Chiefs and Saints.
We've asked you specifics, PJ. Give us your favorite, though, bets of the NFL weekend.
Guys, I will, so some of my favorites. I love Cincinnati this week against the Ravens. I'll just continue to pile on my teams in Baltimore. But I think it's a great spot for Cincinnati. Look, the Bengals started the season 0-3, right? And everybody kind of left them for dead. And now all of a sudden, if they win this game, they're 2-3. They have the same record as the Ravens, and they have one head-to-head win over them. I've been talking about this on my show all week, too. The team that you've seen the last 2 weeks out of Baltimore, you're not going to see this week when they go up against Cincinnati. The Ravens the last 2 weeks were in must-win situations. And when they're in must-win situations, they lean on their bread and butter, and they run the football. They lean on Derrick Henry 20 to 25 times. They run Lamar Jackson. They don't really throw the ball all that much, and that's when the Ravens are at their best. But when they decide to throw, like I think they're going to do on Sunday against Cincinnati when they see a really bad defense on the other side, that's when they tend to get into trouble, when they forget about who they are. I've seen it so many times. You guys got to see in the AFC Championship game against the Chiefs when they completely abandoned the run. The total has dropped from 51.5 to 49.5 in this game too, which I think is telling you a lot, that even with how bad Cincy's defense is, the under keeps dropping. I like the Bengals plus the points against Baltimore. I also like the Raiders plus 3 against Denver as well. Broncos are coming off two big wins as big underdogs against the Bucs and against the Jets last week. Now they come home, and this is honestly just a fade of Bo Nix as a favorite. And we're getting a key number, low total of 36 in a divisional game. So I'll take the Raiders to keep it close. A little bit concerned about the whole Davante Adams thing and maybe how that's playing out in the locker room, but he didn't play for them last week. They ended up winning that game. I think they'll be okay this week, too. I'll take Vegas plus 3 against Denver.
PJ, after a massive college football weekend last weekend with Bama, Georgia, and that instant classic and all of the other major matchups, it's kind of a breather of a weekend in college football. There's only one top 25 matchup on the entire slate for Saturday, and that's Missouri and Texas A&M. Are there games that you like? Are there good angles knowing that there aren't these premier major matchups?
There are, Tommy. Things I would look at this week are certainly some look-ahead spots, because even though the slate this week isn't great, guys, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at next week's slate. It's spectacular. Right? You got Ole Miss and LSU. You got Penn State and USC, Oregon and Ohio State. You got some heavyweight matchups. So certainly some look-ahead spots. Thinking about which teams might not be necessarily treating their games this week all that much, not showing much on film, and then gearing up for next week. I think you got to fade Bama this week against Vanderbilt off of that just all-timer against Georgia last week. How are they not going to have a little bit of a letdown? Keep in mind, too, Vanderbilt this season, they upset Virginia Tech as two touchdown underdogs. They lost to Missouri by 3 points as three touchdown underdogs. That's a pesky team that can keep games close. I like them to keep it within the number against Bama. And then give me Northwestern plus the points against Indiana as well. Guys, I've been waiting to fade Indiana. They've been one of the biggest surprises of the college football season. You see it all the time, though, in this sport. Whenever a team is undefeated and finally becomes ranked for the first time, that is the time to fade them. They go on the road and play Northwestern, laying two touchdowns. So I'll take Northwestern to keep that game close, and Vanderbilt as well. And then like Iowa against Ohio State, maybe looking ahead to Oregon, and then potentially Minnesota against USC. Maybe the Trojans looking ahead to Penn State, a couple of good spots as well.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be another big betting weekend. PJ, we're glad to have you on board. I apologize for what Kansas City's been doing to Baltimore sports lately. Not really, but sort of. I feel for you. We've all been there. We get it. But hey, Royals are still dancing. Ravens will be
they
fine.
Are.
They'll be fine.
We all have our waves. Fellas, just beat the Yankees, all right? That's as long as you beat the Yankees.
We can
all
agree on that. Yes, that is correct. Yeah. No matter what you root for. PJ, we appreciate it. That's the host of Send It In, Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, PJ Glasser. Insider calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. We'll do it again next week. Always appreciate PJ's insight. Always so good. So there it all is for you. If you missed any of it, by the way, if you're just joining us, you want to get some of that. PJ with a lot on the NFL and a little on college football there. You can, of course, go back and listen to that interview on the Odyssey app. It's easy. Odyssey app is such an awesome app and tool. All kinds of podcasts from all across the country. This show gets podcast on there, of course. So check it out if you don't have it. When we return on Sports Daily, our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald's going to stop by. It's a bye week, a chance to regroup, sort of refocus a little bit. I think it's a good point in the season for the Cats to do that as well. We'll have Fitz in next. Don't go anywhere. It's Sports Daily on a Thursday.
In Odyssey Sports Station, this is 97.5 and 1240 KFH, KNSS HD2 Clearwater, Wichita's most listened to sports radio.
It's After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90-plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
He's got all the insight of what you want to know and maybe some of what you don't want to know. Here's K-State insider Tim Fitzgerald.
There it is, Fitz. Live in the flesh, it's Jacob Albrecht, it's Tommy Kester at Sports Daily, it's hour number two, Chad Chambers producing, he's got the IHOP hotline, celebrate the weekdays with our new IHOP house faves, all your favorites, just $6 Monday through Friday, that's 869-1240, that's where we have Tim Fitzgerald, we've also got him on our video stream, which is available on 12 News Connected Plus, which is available on Facebook, YouTube, X, all the places. Fitz, how are you? Good morning, welcome in.
I'm good. I'm good. It's a beautiful morning, a little crisp here, and I got an off weekend. Oh, man. I'm in high cotton.
High cotton. K-State's in high cotton. Avery Johnson's in high cotton. There it is, everybody. There it is, haters. That's the Avery Johnson that we know is there, and we got it. You know, probably it's the first time we've really seen everything within one individual game from him. His ability to, you know, to throw the deep ball, his arm strength on some passes to the sidelines. Obviously, we knew he could run, but that was really top to bottom impressive.
And yet he can run, but he hadn't quite taken that next gear and turned the ball in or took on a defender, which I understand they're trying to limit, but I think he needs those pads to pop too. And I think the stepping out of bounds the entire game makes him a little passive, but he kind of shifted into gear. This was the first game I thought I saw him just relax and play, just go have fun. And maybe it was because they got rolling, but it was good to see because that's the kind of quarterback he can be and he will be. He's just a young kid learning his way.
I remember we talked last week, Fitz, after the BYU game about just some of the opportunities that Kansas State squandered against BYU, especially in the red zone. They had a really difficult time against BYU. That was absolutely corrected and improved against Oklahoma State. They were able to score 4 touchdowns in the red zone each time that they were in Oklahoma State's red zone on Saturday. So that clearly had to have been a focus for Chris Klieman and the crew leading up to that game. I'm guessing when you see that big of a change from one week to the next, that had to have been a top priority.
Yeah, they looked a lot more focused inside the red zone. They really did. And it also helps that, you know, you get 2 explosive TDs to go with that. It's really the upside of this offense is back. And it's something that I hope to continue to see growth because they're going to need it at times, and maybe even next Saturday at Colorado. But they have a lot of weapons. They're just now starting to explore them. And when they put them on the field, particularly in the red zone, it really stresses the defense. It really does. And it puts a lot of pressure on them to try to take away everything, which at the end of the day isn't really possible.
Fitz, I brought this up with Wyatt Thompson earlier in the week, and it's been really interesting to me to see it. And I don't know if you're seeing the same thing or if I'm off on this. I almost feel like K-State's inviting teams to throw on them. they sold out in a lot of ways to stop Ollie Williams early. And I think they might be doing it because it invites sacks. We've seen, well, there have been teams that do this, right? We're willing to let you throw on us because we know that there is more likely to be a drive-ending play on a passing down when we sack the quarterback, or we can, it invites turnovers. And I don't know if they're doing that on purpose, but boy, they sure sold out to stop Ollie Williams, even though that was a little on coaching. They shouldn't have stopped running it, but they did.
Yeah. Yeah, they took away Ollie Gordon early in that game. After the first quarter, he had 72 yards, and he ended the day with 76 yards. Some of that was dreadful play calling, getting away from what worked, but they did a nice job. And I think you're right, because their man-to-man defense has been so good on the back end. And we saw that with, Jacob Parrish interception, that it's been so sticky that it's really hard for opposing offenses to get much going. And so they just bring a lot of pressure. They come after your quarterback in passing situations. But they're pressing the line of scrimmage, whether it's a run or a pass. And it's a fun kind of defense to watch unless you get a bleed flicker thrown at you and you fall for it. But they are an aggressive defense. It hasn't always been done at K-State. It's been a lot of years of bend but don't break. And now they're getting after opposing teams and putting pressure on them, making it difficult for quarterbacks to get into a rhythm. And I think that's been really effective.
Fitz, we're gonna let you reconnect real quick. We're getting a little static and feedback from you. So let's try a reconnection real quick with Fitz. And then we'll bring him right back on. Tommy, it is interesting, because there was a point in the year where, like, early in the year, I thought, man, the secondary just looks not good at all. But now it's all, and I could be way off on this, but I think they're willing to let it be and just not let teams run on them. Does that make any sense? It makes sense as like a sound strategy to me.
Well, I think they had to against Oklahoma State because of the fact that really the Cowboys' threat is with Ollie Gordon. And that doesn't really take anything away from Alan Bowman. He was fine. He's been fine for the Cowboys. But primarily, like, their major threat is Ollie Gordon. So that would make sense for the Wildcat defense to sell out to stop that.
But even the Arizona game, because BYU was weird, right? BYU didn't put up much on offense. But if you go back and look at the Arizona game, they did the same thing. They let Arizona and almost invited Arizona to throw it, and they made sure they stopped the run. That Fifita had a decent game, right? You remember all the plays to McMillan, that receiver, but they didn't do anything on the ground. And so as we bring Fitz back in and explore that, like, it wasn't just the Oklahoma State game. BYU, because I've tried to look at this, BYU is an outlier. They didn't do anything on offense anyway. But Arizona did the same thing. They threw it a ton, but they couldn't run the ball. And I just, like, if K-State's not going to be a suffocating defense, I don't think they're going to be. Creating more opportunities for big defensive plays on passes does make some sense to me. Of course, you can't do it, though, unless you do have Avery Johnson, that offense, clicking like that.
Yeah, it's so hard to judge games by stats or even final scores. K-State easily beat Oklahoma State and Arizona, and both of those teams had more yardage than BYU did.
Right.
Against K-State. K-State's defense was great against BYU. I saw a Colorado poster, obviously just reading box scores or reading final scores, that said, he's going to score all over K-State. That defense is trashed. I'm like, that defense is pretty good. I mean, look what they've done. They only give up that amount of yards. I think it was like 250 at BYU because two were non-defensive touchdowns or non-offensive touchdowns. The defense wasn't on the field, and two were really short field situations, which angered the coaches that gave up those touchdowns. But we saw that flipped against Oklahoma State, as you mentioned. They had the same quick score, this time off a flea flicker and not a scoop and score, and Avery turned around and threw an interception. That was what started the meltdown in Provo, and this time the K-State defense held him out of the end zone, made him kick a field goal. And they, right after that, Avery just took off. So I think the defense has got some improvement to make, but they've been pretty effective so far. But I'll be interested to see what they do against a truly physical team like Utah if they come across them this season. That'd have to be in Arlington. But because it's not the biggest front in the Big 12. It's not that big a front. But they do a great job. They play so hard, and the linebackers have been elite. Austin Romaine has been elite this season.
DJ Giddens, of course, had a phenomenal game against Oklahoma State as well, Fitz. And, of course, it was capped off and highlighted by that long TD run that he had. You look at just his stat line at first glance, obviously, you know, averaging over 12 yards a carry because of, you know, the big play that he had for the touchdown. But really, that was, I think, the perfect usage of being able to have Avery Johnson on the ground, but then also DJ Giddens doing what he does best. And then, of course, they were able to bring in Dylan Edwards, and Joe Jackson had a few carries as well. How did you feel about the overall distribution of touches in the game for the running backs?
It was interesting. DJ Giddens was completely dominant. Only had 15 carries, guys. I mean, you know, he goes for almost 200 in the game on 15 carries, averaging more than 12 yards a carry. That's elite. And he has been very good. And he just seems to get a little bit better all the time. It's absolutely incredible the progress DJ Giddens has made. And he just soaks up everything around him. He's literally a guy that's listening and learning, as it turns out, more than talking, because he doesn't like to talk a whole bunch. But, yeah, Dylan Edwards was on the field quite a bit. He had a number of touches. But he had an impact on the defense that's so important. You got to get him on the field for that impact to be there. You have to account for him. And who do you look to, you know, pay attention less to, Avery, DJ, or Dylan? Well, they see DJ as the least explosive of the three, maybe, and that's who they chose. And then the cat just ran for 66 yards right through the heart of their defense. So it's an interesting trio. When they put them on the field together, it's extremely hard to stop.
10 touches for Dylan. Is that a good number for you? I think it is, knowing he'd be involved in special teams. I mean, 10 touches is a pretty good baseline, I think, for Edwards' usage.
I agree. As long as it's matched by maybe 10 non-touches, but he's on the field, or 15.
Yeah, yeah.
That's his effect. Isn't just the touches, it's the presence. And one thing Oklahoma State did well in this game, they didn't do much well, but they took away Dylan Edwards. He was a couple shoestring tackles away, maybe for some long runs, but they kept him in check a little bit. But they also were committed to that, and you saw the results of that in how DJ and Avery played.
I want to go back to something that you mentioned a few minutes ago, Fitz, that I think was absolutely crucial, and that was that stretch when Oklahoma State took their only lead of the game, and then Avery Johnson threw a pick. And then it very easily could have snowballed and spiraled out of control for the Wildcats in kind of the same fashion that it did a couple of weeks ago against BYU. They kept kept Oklahoma State out of the end zone. And then ultimately that was the last lead that Oklahoma State had. The change from 2 weeks ago to last week, is that a mental thing? Is that just, you know, better execution, or is that something that you can focus on to try to make sure that things like what happened at BYU don't happen again?
I think it's a growth process for this team. I mean, they've got some young leaders, you know, and Avery, and DJ's a really quiet kid, and Dylan's a presence in that locker room. But I think they grew from what happened at Provo. But we have to acknowledge the other issue here is they've gone on the road twice, and let's be blunt, they sucked. They escaped.
They got to do it two more. They got to do it twice in a row after this bye week.
I know.
Right?
Yeah. This bye week is enormous. And, you know, we got a question on our podcast that went up yesterday. You know, how do you fix it? I don't know. I mean, I've never coached, and I imagine even coaches are like, okay, we don't have a great record again after bye weeks under Chris Klieman at K-State, and we don't play well on the road, and that's what we got to do the next 2 weeks. How do you solve that? It's got to be mostly mental, but some of it is physical preparation. And I said at the very start of that Tulane game, I don't like the body language from this team. They just don't look engaged, and they haven't looked fully engaged in either road game. And of course, stuff at BYU, just I've never seen an alignment, a convergence of bad things happen like that in a football game ever before, and I've been doing this a long time. So that just took the wind out of their sails. They got to come out Colorado. They got to start fast. They got to be physical. And
postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Replicate that in West Virginia. These two games will entirely decide the course of this season because of that loss at BYU. You got to win these two. You just do.
Well, you look ahead at the schedule, Fitz, and I think, and this is the bye week we can do these things. You know, the team doesn't want to look ahead. We do.
Mm-hmm.
You've played the toughest three-game stretch most likely on your schedule. The three, there's a probably better than 50% chance you've played the three toughest teams on your schedule. No offense to Iowa State, and we'll see how that goes at the end of the year. But up until that game right now, it's all right there. The road challenge is real, but it's, you know, Colorado's probably better than we thought. West Virginia's meh. Kansas obviously is going through their stuff. Houston, Arizona State, Cincinnati, like, They made it through that stretch 2-1. I think you feel good about that as it pertains to playing in a Big 12 championship game. Like, K-State's got it kind of in front of them again.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. They really do control everything that they need to control. I mean, it gets a little daunting, but you win these two games, you come home and play Kansas. It's a rivalry game. I still believe Kansas is going to find a way to play better football. That's not who they are so far this season. I'm a little baffled by it. I can't imagine people that cover KU trying to figure that one out. But then you go to Houston. I mean, they're really struggling. You get another off week. You come home and play Arizona State, which is better than we thought. Cincinnati, which might be better than we thought, but still not. You should be able to handle them on your home field before going to Iowa State. And I think Iowa State is legit. I think that game will decide one of the entrants into the Big 12 championship game, if not both. I mean, you could see maybe both those teams coming out with one loss and maybe a tiebreaker if they got two losses over whoever else is in there. It's going to be a fun stretch of football. K-State's got an opportunity here to line them up and beat them. But, boy, you got to start with back-to-back on the road. That's a huge step for this team to get it done.
We always talk about conference realignment when we've got you on the show. Gonzaga to the Pac-12. That was the big news a couple of days ago. It's interesting. Obviously, this new look Pac-12, at least to me, signals that they're kind of punting on football being a brand for them, and it's more about trying to build up a basketball brand by including Gonzaga. Do you feel the same way on that? What was the motivation for Gonzaga to ultimately end up with the Pac-12?
I think it was the best ad in terms of brand value they could get. Now, I think we're all rooting for Gonzaga to add football, but that's not going to happen.
No.
I'm a little surprised they just went with one. I mean, you got to add another football school or you're not a conference. You got to have eight playing football. And I think they wanted UConn as a football-only member to get over that hurdle, and that didn't work out. They're going to have to find someone else to come into the league. I think they'll probably accomplish that. I mean, if they're very desperate, they can get Hawaii as a football only, you know, just like the Mountain West does. So, this movement of Gonzaga to the pack, whatever, is interesting. But I think they're going to have to go back to the well and maybe invite St. Mary's or someone else to play basketball only. You don't want to get an uneven number, but then again, you don't want to water down your money either. So it was a bold move. Let's put it that way.
I would say this, and I could be reading too much into this, but I take away from them doing that, that they believe the same thing Brett Yormark believes, and that there is individual value for basketball, and that these deals don't have to be so beholden to football only, and that we may be moving to a road of separate basketball television deals than we get on football deals. Because otherwise, I don't know why they would add Gonzaga unless they feel that same sort of thing. The Pac-12 is not going to make a ton of money in football. They're not in a TV deal, but they might make some money with basketball, and that's why you would go get Gonzaga. It's why Brett Yormark wanted Gonzaga.
So I also believe this might be an indication that Oregon State, Washington State, and the new Pac are betting on the Super Conference, the 72 school thing, not just the Big Ten and SEC, but all the top football brands will be merged into one league for football only, which is a very interesting plan. And of course, it's inclusive, so the SEC is against it. And if that happens, your individual TV rights will be about basketball. I mean, football's probably going to have a giant TV deal with all the networks, and that money will be divvied up in some way. But basketball then becomes your honeypot. And I'm telling you what, if Brett Yormark pulls this off and ends up with an elite basketball league, and that's the revenue they get to keep for the league, he's going to look even more brilliant than he is already. But I think this is a signal from the Pac-2 that they think there's going to be a Super League. They think they'll be in that Super League, which the numbers would indicate they would be at this point. And that then the conference will be more about basketball and other sports. And, of course, basketball would be the revenue generator.
All right, Fitz. What do you guys have going at Go Power Cat in the bye week?
We're doing some reflective stuff, some grades of the offense went up today. Defense will go tomorrow. Position grades, everyone on the staff gives their analysis and a grade. And I think it's been a fun exercise to stop and pause and think about how each position group's played. So we got that cooking. Got a cool edition of the Friday Walkthrough dropping at midnight tonight. Friday Walkthrough is our show that leads into the game with former K-State player Monty Spiller and our Cole Carmody. But Brian Hanley sat in, so it's a three-man panel. And those Brian and Monty have never been on together, so I'm anxious to watch that one myself. But a lot of video and audio stuff going up, but we do have a lot of VIP coverage this week for our subscribers of analysis of where this team's at five games into the season. And this is just the first of two breaks this year. They're going to play four more and take another off week and finish up with three games. So there's a nice cadence right now to the season.
GoPowerCat.com. That's where you'll find it all. You can follow Fitz at Life of Fitz on social media. Enjoy the bye week, and we'll do it again next week.
Thank you, boys. Great to see you.
There goes Tim Fitzgerald. If you missed any of it, go back and listen on the Odyssey app. Go to GoPowerCat.com to get all his staff's great coverage on the Wildcats. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll sort of catch up on some things as it, you know, we've been discussing throughout the day. We've discussed a little bit on the Chiefs, you know, and we've discussed a little bit here on the Royals, but we'll come back. We'll put a nice path for you to chime in on the program on the IHOP hotline, 869-1240, on the video streams, on the Odyssey app through voice messaging, open phones, open commentary the rest of the way. We'll be right back with more Sports Daily. Let's give away a little HTO. If you want to win a free iced tea, more than 20 flavors to choose from, free cup of tea, and a free iced or hot coffee drink, you can get one of each right now by texting to win. All you got to do is text the keyword TEA to the short code 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Those coffees good for the all new butter mocha pecan. Butter pecan mocha, I should say, and a dirty chai apple crisp, as well as the iced tea, any of the three metro locations. Good luck, everybody. Welcome back into Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here, Jad Chambers producing. Tommy, I want to go all the way back here. If you missed anything with Tim Fitzgerald or PJ Glasser, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. I want to go back to the segment with Glasser, who covers things nationally, right? And Mahomes is not playing well. And it gets interesting as people try to evaluate, like, what's next. And I go back to 2022. In 2022, it was that, remember, that was the year the Chiefs also had a wide receiver problem, right? Juju was there. Juju was not stellar, but he certainly helped Mahomes with 78 catches, but it was for 933 yards. He wasn't doing much. If you look at that year, though, so that year Mahomes threw for 5,200 yards, 41 touchdowns and 12 picks. He was incredible in 2022. He didn't have anybody to throw to at the wide receiver position, right? He had Juju, and Juju's on this team now. But it was a big Kelce year, you'll remember. The backs were involved. The tight ends were involved. They spread the ball around. I think if we look back there and remember those things and we look at the pass-catching group now, it's sort of similar, right? Like, it's sort of similar to what we see. Now, Mahomes has not been nearly as good this year as he was that year. So I do think some criticism Mahomes is fair because, and walk this long, windy road with me, people are saying Mahomes doesn't look good. Chiefs fans would probably say, well, he doesn't have anybody to throw to. He doesn't have any of his weapons. He's had all these injuries. I would point you to 2022 to remember what Mahomes can do despite all of those things, because that was what he was dealing with in 2022, and he put up otherworldly numbers. So he is struggling a little bit. And I think that should probably, if you're a fan, don't get defensive about that. I think that should make you hopeful, right? They're 4-0 and all these things. Like, we know Mahomes can be better despite these things. Defenses were playing the Chiefs the same way back then. That was the old dink and dunk offense, right? It took them to a Super Bowl. So I think that is as we think about trades and do they need to bring anybody in, remember that year. They had the same, that's, you know, is a lot of the same pass catchers on that team as they have right now.
I think really the biggest thing that I'm going to be paying attention to starting Monday night and then moving forward is, can he bounce back from a September that he'd like to forget? And, you know, obviously Mahomes didn't have a good start to the year. And that's unlike him. I mean, typically, if you think back to him in the NFL, he typically starts off seasons really well statistically. Like, that's usually a highlight of the year. And there have been years, 2022 is one of them, where the entire year was outstanding statistically. But, this has been kind of the first year that we've really seen him not play up to his standards to kick off a season. I think there's a variety of reasons for that. And so I'm really going to be paying close attention now that we flip the calendar over to October to see if he can shake that loose. If he can, then at that point, yeah, like, I don't have major concerns at all about his individual play. And the first four games have shown that even despite not being elite, I guess, or playing elite in the first four games of the season, that the Chiefs can still win. They can still get those W's. And I think that's, you know, really the most important thing moving forward.
Yeah. And it's also interesting because he's not that far off, honestly. Like, if you projected what he's done this year out, other than the interceptions being a little, like, he's not that far off from exactly what he was doing last year. That's what's kind of crazy about it, right? That is what we saw last year out of Mahomes. Like, a lot of the same thing. He's projecting out to about the same amount of yards. And that probably tells me that stylistically, the Chiefs are playing sort of the same kind of football. Like, that's what they have gone to. I thought they would go back further and he'd have one of those absurd stat years. Well, now the injuries aren't going to let that happen. I cannot shake how much this team reminds me of those Patriots, early Patriots teams, where, like, if I asked you right now of the pre-Moss Patriots that won three Super Bowls, right? I think they got three before Moss got there, and then they lost when Moss was there. Who was the second best offensive player on those teams?
It was usually one of, I mean, they had a bunch of random receivers during those years.
Probably.
Yeah.
So they had Corey Dillon in one of those years, a good run game. Like, that's what I keep going back to. And I say that because man, Mahomes reminds me of Brady in a lot of ways.
The only difference that I want to point out, I want to jump in really quick with those Patriots seasons that when they really started, and I know that they had this success early on, even without, these receivers that they ended up on the roster, but there was usually, especially towards, the second decade or so of Brady with the Patriots, where there was always like that security blanket receiver, whether that was Wes Welker or Danny Amendola or, Julian Edelman towards the end. Like there was always kind of, even if they weren't like a high profile, like major wide receiver one, it was usually a slot guy that between whoever that person was and like Gronkowski that he ended up having a lot of success with. And that's, I think, really the only thing that the Chiefs don't have that's not similar is I don't know who that security blanket person is right now for them. It's typically Travis Kelce, but at least with the Patriots, they had Gronk and then they had, one of those slot guys.
Yeah, I agree. I just like to me, what reminds me, Brady and Mahomes don't look the same when they play football. That's not what I'm saying at all. They're different quarterbacks, but what reminds me of Brady so much of Mahomes is that no matter what it takes, that's what he'll do. Right. If it takes him being Herculean and putting up the gaudy stats and that's what he'll do. If it takes uglying his way through a game and putting his defense in a position to be great, that's what he'll do. And so I think all of those things should just settle things in. And it's a luxury for the Chiefs that not a lot of teams have, but when you say they get the luxury of they've always got Mahomes, they've always got Kelce, they've always got Andy Reid, that's the kind of thing you're talking about there. Like, it doesn't matter that it's been ugly wins. It only matters that it's been wins. Does anybody out there really think the Chiefs aren't for real? Because their wins have been close and ugly. I mean, it's crickets. There isn't a person on the planet that thinks that. Now, does that mean they should stand pat and not try to get better before the postseason? Of course it doesn't. Does that mean they shouldn't be more desperate as they chase history? No, it doesn't. They should be more desperate as they chase history. They should be, more desperate as the Travis Kelce window appears to be closing and who knows with it. Like, yes, they should still do all those things, but I don't think there's any reason for concern. You'll hear the concern nationally, but we've seen this song and dance. We saw it a year ago. We saw that Mahomes. He's not that far off from it. And he'll shake it off. He'll be better. He'll make fewer mistakes, but he's going to have to take more risks too, which means more mistakes are going to come. So just what that made me think of that when Glasser brought that up, just how strange it's been for him as they're 4-0 and these numbers dictate. No news, by the way, on Rashee Rice. No news on the trade front, no news on any of it. I don't know what to make of all that. I think they're okay against the Saints. We'll have Monday to really dive into that game and tomorrow, quite frankly, but I guess we just wait on Rice. I don't know what to make of it. They're on a bye week.
I've said it all week long that they're not going to make a move at wide receiver until they know what that timeline looks like. And the prognosis for Rashee Rice, because again, you have to also take into consideration a looming suspension that is not going to run concurrent with an injury. It will be, something that is tacked on potentially once he's healthy. So, depending on what that looks like, what they know about him, if they can get him back sometime this season or for the playoffs or whatever, that's going to dictate it. I think also they are needing to figure out, regardless of what his prognosis is, will they look for somebody just in the short term, or is it something that they would need to try to, get somebody signed for the future too? So there's a lot of different hurdles to clear, I think, before we even have a fairly high likelihood that the Chiefs will make any move at all.
So they didn't talk yesterday because I think it's because Monday Night Football and they'll move to today. Today may be the thing we get. It's mind numbing to follow all the Twitter doctors. And that's not a joke. That's not tongue in cheek. Like, there are a lot of doctors now that have made a living out of like trying to analyze sports injuries. There are a lot of them, Tommy, that think it might be like a bone bruise and a LCL sprain, which is still significant, still could miss, four plus games, but would be a wildly different outcome than we've thought about for the last 72 hours or so And I'll just give us the information, please, Chiefs. I'm pretty sure Reed will talk today. So today may be the day, and it will keep our eye out here if he does in the next 20 minutes or so. But watch for that, because that could be coming. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll go back and celebrate a little Royals. We did that to start the show. We'll do it to finish the show. It's all Brockton Caster at Sports Daily. Jad Chambers producing. IHOP hotline is open the rest of the way, 869-1240. We'll come back. We'll have it for you next. All right, welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. Lots of ways to get in touch with the program, including voice messages on the Odyssey app. Deshaun left us a message with a question about the Pac-12, part of the discussion we were having with Tim Fitzgerald. Here's that from Jeff.
Good morning, Jacob and Tommy. Tim kind of touched on it in y'all's little Pac-12 conversation, but I wanted y'all's opinion on what's going on with the Pac-12 and with the addition of Gonzaga, if it would make sense for Wichita State to transition to the Pac-12 as a basketball-only or Olympic sports-only member. I really don't see what the difference is in traveling out west to San Diego State, Boise, Fresno State, and Gonzaga versus traveling to East Carolina, Charlotte, FAU, and USF. And I think it would position our basketball brand better than what we have in the American, and it could be better if Memphis makes that move too. So just curious about your thoughts. Thanks.
I appreciate several things about that. A, it sounds like, Deshaun, maybe you were sneaking that voice message in. Man, I appreciate that. If that was the case, you know, whatever you're doing, you're working, you sneak out and grab that in. It's a great point. We haven't talked about that, and we probably should have. I would say this. If Memphis left the AAC, yes, I would say the Pac-12 would be a better fit. With Memphis there, I don't know how much of an upgrade right now that is as a basketball league over the American.
Oh, I think it's a big upgrade right now. Now that they added Gonzaga.
I mean, it's because you get Gonzaga and San Diego State.
Yeah, so I think that it absolutely is an upgrade.
But top to bottom, is it better? I mean, look at what FAU has done. I don't know. I don't know that it's like a slam dunk better, I guess, is my point. And I'm also not sure that it's a slam dunk better football league, because a lot of AAC teams have turned them down. But when you're talking about Memphis, you know, and they did lose SMU, which stings a little bit. But they're, you know, Temple's got history. I don't know the value of these brands.
Do you know how many
most valuable?
Do you know how many Mountain West schools made the tournament a year ago? Six. There were six.
I love the Mountain West.
And so you've got now kind of this like almost basketball powerhouse on the West Coast, where again, like it, you know, definitely with the addition of Gonzaga, they're leaning into wanting to build this class basketball brand.
Yeah.
That's what Wichita State thought that they were getting when they joined the American. And then you have UConn leave, and you have Houston leave, and you have Cincinnati leave.
It's
what they got for a few years, and then obviously things changed. I don't think that it's, for me at least, a question of what happens with Memphis one way or another. I don't think it's that. I think it's, hey, it's not the same as it was 5 years ago when we first came in to the conference. I think you end up upgrading significantly if you go to a reimagined Pac-12.
Let me circle back to my point, though. Yes, in quality of league, I think it will at least be somewhat better, right, with Gonzaga and San Diego State coming in. Yes. Will it be financially better? That's what I don't know yet, right? Because they don't have a deal at this point for football. And the American has a pretty good one. And I think that's why you're seeing some of these teams turn them down. So my point is on that, it's gotta put Wichita State in a better financial situation to make a move like that. The other side of it is obviously they would have to want Wichita State in. You know, Wichita State, when they joined the American, I think the Pac-12 would have already made that call. Wichita State recently, what value does Wichita State bring to the Pac-12? Probably none right now. if we're being honest about it. And so it makes it a little more complicated. We need Wichita State to get good and get good fast for a thousand reasons that we've talked about on this show. There is a concern to be left behind in all of this if they don't. The American's still a good basketball league. The American's still a good football league. I still think there is strength in the American. And I don't think whatever the larger picture things that happen with football will impact Wichita State's ability to make the NCAA basketball tournament. But yeah, if the Pac-12 puts together a deal that, you know, makes, would potentially make Wichita State more money than it currently makes in the American, they should absolutely go out there. They got to get invited first. And second, the Pac-12's got to be able to get that kind of deal. I don't care how good the league is, Tommy. If they can't get a deal to make these schools money, you wouldn't leave if you were Wichita State. You wouldn't leave money on the table. Can't do that. And so I think it's a complicated question, but I think it is a really good question, Deshaun, and we appreciate it there on the app. Real quick, final thoughts on the Royals, Tommy, and we'll obviously have a chance to preview the series with the Yankees tomorrow. Is there any reason, I guess I would ask you this way, is there any reason you can see that the Royals are not capable of winning a World Series?
I'm not sure that they are going to be able to score as few runs per game that they did against the Orioles and be able to win this series.
Certainly.
That's the only concern. It worked against the Orioles. The lineup is different with the Yankees.
But are you actually concerned about it?
Yeah, I am, because we've seen an extended period of time where the offense just really hasn't come through. I think what's most concerning, and ultimately, as we know, the Royals moved on despite this, they had a really tough time with runners in scoring position in the Orioles series, especially yesterday. There were a bunch of runners left on base, and for both teams, to be fair, but the Royals for sure. And that's been a symptom for the last couple of weeks. I mean, when the offense got really anemic down the stretch in the regular season, it really, a lot of it was driving in runs. Like, they would get runners in scoring position and there was nobody to drive them in. That has persisted through the wild card round. They've been able to hang on with, like, Sterling starting pitching, and the bullpen has been lights out. All of that's great. I'm not taking anything away from that. But man, like, you're dealing with, first off, really good pitchers for the most part with the Yankees, with Gerrit Cole and Rodon and others. But then that, you know, top part of the lineup for the Yankees, they're going to score more runs in this series than the Orioles did. There's no doubt about that. So you've got to be able to match that.
I agree. I guess my thing is I'm confident they can, because I think Vinny looks good. And if Vinny looks good and he's at least at the plate back and all the way back, I do think it totally changes the outlook of their lineup. You know, to put him square right in the middle of your two other all-stars, I think it's a difference maker for them. Now, are they going to come out and score seven runs a game? No, but they maybe get to four, maybe get to five. And the way they pitch, you feel good about that. If you could tell me the Royals average 4.5 runs a game the rest of the way in the postseason, I'd say I like their chances.
I'd take that. I'd take that for sure. I mean, they scored three in two games in the wild card round. So I would take 4.5 per game every day of the week.
And it's been a long time in any, you know, over even in the regular season, when you look back, that they've scored that kind of, you know, they've had that kind of output. But I do think it's there. I think they're capable of doing it now with Vinny Pasquantino back in the lineup. Because if we, you know, if you look at the offense, to me, he looked fine at the plate. Like, he looked good. He looked comfortable. He looked productive. He's still selective. I don't know if he's going to hit home runs, but I think his presence there will matter greatly. We'll have much, much more on that with the Royals tomorrow on the program. All right, we're going to take our final break here. We'll come back. We'll tell you what's on the network today. Some Thursday night football as we wrap up this Thursday edition of Sports Daily.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.